This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. Starting Thursday of last week, the world's largest economies, known as the G20, met in Hamburg, Germany. The meeting was met by tens of thousands of anti-capitalist protesters, most of whom were peaceful, but there were days of standoffs between police and protesters, which led to parts of Hamburg looking like a war zone. Melania Trump had to miss at least one major event because it was determined that because of the protests, it was unsafe for her to leave the fortified building where she stayed. 476 police officers were injured and 225 protesters detained. Of those who were detained, about 186 were actually arrested. The G20 meetings by these heads of state were overshadowed with the hype fueled mainly by U.S. mainstream media about the first face-to-face meeting between Donald Trump and Russia's Vladimir Putin. But what else happened at the summit? What kinds of realignments among governments happen? Did the U.S. come out stronger or weaker from the meetings? To discuss all of this and to weigh in, I'd like to welcome back to Sojourner Truth our regular Dr. Gerald Horn, who is a professor of history and African-American studies at the University of Houston. He's published more than 30 books, including Confronting Black Jacobins, the U.S., the Haitian Revolution, and the Origins of the Dominican Republic, and Paul Ropes and the Artist as Revolutionary. He has won awards for his work for outstanding scholarship and leadership in Africana studies. Dr. Horn, welcome.
Thank you for inviting me.
Dr. Horn, sadly, you were not able to join us on our roundtable, our weekly roundtable last week on Friday, where we discussed at least the beginnings of the G20 summit. But we wanted to get your views about what of significance do you think came out of the summit?
Well, first of all, I think the G20 could be better referred to as the G19 plus one. That is to say, the one being the United States. The United States was isolated on the question of climate change, and it was also isolated on the question of trade. It's apparent that the U.S. administration under Donald J. Trump does not prefer multilateral meetings like the G20. They prefer bilateral meetings, one-on-one meetings, and that's why Mr. Trump spent so much time having one-on-one meetings with the head of Russia, the head of South Korea, the head of Indonesia, et cetera. Another point that came out of the G20 meeting in terms of realignments is that it's apparent that the United States under Mr. Trump is trying to pursue a new strategy. That is to say, rather than targeting Moscow, which has been the U.S. strategy for more than a century, the strategy now is to neutralize Moscow, which from imperialism's point of view makes sense, because if you look over past decades, as President Fidel Castro pointed out some years ago, it's Moscow, either under the Soviet Union or the post-Soviet regime, that stood in the way of U.S. domination. I mean, for example, look at Syria as we speak. But it appears that that's going to be coupled with the targeting of the European Union, and particularly Germany. Now, with Mr. Trump, it's always hard to tell what's behind this strategy. For example, it's known that he owes Deutsche Bank of Germany, quite close to U.S. to German ruling elites in Berlin, hundreds of millions of dollars. And so one has to wonder if the targeting of Germany has something to do with his bank account. And that also ties in, for example, with his neutralizing of Russia, because it would be inadvisable to target Russia and Germany simultaneously.
Right. And we also saw really a kind of a realignment that you touched on in your opening comments. And we are going to have to briefly touch on this Trump-Putin meeting, because on the one hand, we know that with NATO really cozying up to Russia's borders, breaking the agreement with Russia, something that Russia certainly is concerned about, that there seems to be quite a friendly relationship between Donald Trump and Putin, and news emerging each and every day about various meetings, people related to the Trump campaign or in the Trump administration has had with Russia. And clearly they seem to have a simpatico relationship at that meeting. But in terms of what actually came out of the meeting between Trump and Putin, what do you think? And including about this ceasefire in the part of Syria that really isn't the key area in Syria right now in terms of conflict, Dr. Horn.
Well, it's hard to say what came out of this meeting concretely. You mentioned the so-called ceasefire in Syria, which you correctly downgrade and downplay. Apparently, Russia has not been helpful with regard to settling this crisis in North Korea. And in fact, another point that emerges from the G20 summit is that the bromance between President Xi Jinping and Donald J. Trump apparently has cooled. It's not only the fact that the United States has slapped sanctions on China and has sold $1 billion of worth of weapons to China's rebel province that it claims, speaking of Taiwan, but as we speak, there are very dangerous military maneuvers unfolding in the eastern Indian Ocean Sea involving U.S. vessels, Indian vessels, and Japanese vessels. That particular coalition is going to be targeting China for some years to come. And quite frankly, not only is it dangerous, but it also points to why the United States feels it advisable to neutralize Russia, because it would be inadvisable to take on Russia and China simultaneously, too, just like it would be inadvisable to take on Russia and Germany simultaneously. Speaking of all these headlines in the U.S. press about Russian interference, allegedly, in the U.S. elections, well, first of all, despite this interference, it did not keep the black community from voting against Trump 9-1. And so in some ways, this story helps to reinscribe the whiteness of the United States of America. And second of all, it's very curious that Donald J. Trump has this relationship with Moscow that obviously is not hurting him with his base, while in recent decades, those who had a close relationship with Moscow, I think of Paul Robeson, they were basically broken on the rack. And this points to the kind of double standard and racist double standard that continues to exist in the United States that tends to benefit the white right and conservatism generally.
Right. And, you know, also, I noticed with all of the focus on the interference in the election and, you know, everybody doesn't agree with my particular point of view, because I frankly think that a lot of the U.S. also interferes in elections. And I have no doubt that Russia would as well. But, you know, nobody said much of anything when the U.S. clearly selected the president in Haiti several times. So, as you say, it's very selective about who's friendly with Russia. There's Trump on the one hand, and then look at what happened to Robeson on the other hand. But also that very, very little is said about U.S. interference in elections, i.e. Haiti.
Well, it's not only that. As you know, I'm researching a book on Southern Africa now, and it's well known that in the 1970s, the apartheid regime interfered blatantly in U.S. elections. They helped to defeat Senator Dick Clark of Iowa, who had prevented U.S. covert aid, allegedly, to the anti-communist rebels in Angola. They helped to defeat Senator John Tunney of California at the same time because of his anti-apartheid positions. And yet, there was no serious investigation of that kind of interference by the apartheid regime. And this is why it's very difficult to take seriously some of these allegations that blare from us on the headlines in the U.S. press on a daily basis.
Yeah, well, they certainly seem one-sided, that's for sure. But what about China? How do you think China came out of the G20 meetings? And I think you're quite right to talk about 19 plus one, because it does seem as though most of the G20 pretty much are assuming right now that they just have to work their way around the United States with Trump at the head of it.
In terms of these changing realignments, keep in mind that German relations with China are improving on a daily basis. Recall that President Xi Jinping, before the G20 summit, had a one-on-one meeting with Chancellor Angela Merkel. They attended a soccer game, a football game involving China youth and German youth. Both are being targeted by Washington, and both have a reason to come together. And secondly, both are beneficiaries of this so-called free trade regime that Washington thought would lead to U.S. hegemony forevermore. It hasn't worked out that way. It's basically led to European Union hegemony. and Chinese hegemony, with the United States lagging behind, which is one of the reasons why Donald Trump wants to overturn the apple cart. Not only that, but if you look historically, the United States benefited from the fact that it could take in European migrants and refashion them as so-called white Americans. But now, with the European Union, you see Germany dominating Europe, a 500-person market. In some ways, that's upset the U.S. historic model, which now is reliant upon Asian migrants and Latin American migrants, which overturns, if not erodes, the national cradle of white supremacy, which is one more reason for Donald J. Trump to target Berlin.
Right. And China, I was reading this morning, China is saying that this China responsibility theory on North Korea has got to stop. Trump really pushing China on North Korea. And when we look at North Korea, we could see in terms of China's national interest, but also Russia's national interest and South Korea's national interest are at odds with what the United States seems to be pushing for. I mean, basically, all of those entities want the U.S. Occupation, in a way, of South Korea to stop, right? And so the idea then that the U.S. will be coming together with China, Russia, and South Korea to pressure North Korea seems to be a bit of a stretch. And China also seems particularly upset with the kind of saber rattling that the United States is doing right now in relation to North Korea. Just some final comments, Dr. Horn.
Well, in the Wall Street Journal this morning, there's a front page headline about an attempt by the United States to impose further, more stringent sanctions on China. But I would like to remind Washington of what Secretary of State Hillary Clinton said some years ago, which is very difficult for a government like the United States to be tough on its banker, speaking of Beijing. That is to say, the United States is heavily dependent upon China buying U.S. Treasury bills to keep this government afloat. And obviously that handcuffs and restricts the U.S. ability to crack down upon Beijing. I think that if I were an investor in countries, I'd begin to short South Korea, that is to say, downgrade South Korea, because South Korea is analogous to Germany. It has tens of thousands of U.S. troops. It's a country that has benefited from the free trade regime. Look at the rising dominance of Samsung and Hyundai, for example. And from Mr. Trump's point of view, that's just another chicken to pluck.
Dr. Horn, thank you for joining us, and thank you for your support of KPFK and Pacifica Radio.
Thank you for inviting me.